Valentine's Day. Create a space that feels warm and welcoming with help from Menards. Whether it's a small refresh or a big project, Menards has the tools and materials you need. Build something together and make your home a place you both love coming back to. Don't forget the sweets for your sweetheart. Get a 6-ounce bag of Russell Stover chocolate candies for $3.99 now through February 14th. Save big money and finish your projects together at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome in, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show, firing up here on a fantastic Friday. We are live from the mountains to the sea in the great state of South Carolina, coast to coast, nationwide and worldwide via the Chief Sports Network app. Free to download. Go check it out on Google Play and Apple and the Apple App Store. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax, broadcasting through the orange fog of the upstate of South Carolina. He is JC Sherbert from Points Unknown, as always. Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock himself, will be here shortly. Have him
Where
scheduled.
And
of course, he said he had to take a quick phone call, but then he
disappeared. We got a BRB.
Got a BRB. And of course, we've got Deputy Smitty coming back. Cameron Smith going to talk about some of the new transfer additions here that are coming into Gamecocks football. It'd be fun to have Deputy Smitty back. JC kind of had a great special with him over the Christmas break and looking to kind of make him a more regular thing around here. At least, once a month would be great. Maybe even more than that. Who knows? We'll work something out. But we would bring in Deputy Smitty right at the time where we've got Matt Smith now on the team and another Smitty. So now we have dueling Smitties here at the Chief Sports Network. But you can check out Matthew Smith along with Matt Smith,
Steve.
Along with Steve Hall on Four Quarter Friday. Dropped. They had a pretty good episode today. Talked to
Lane coach Fowler.
Yeah, Burns, basketball coach. They got a big one up against Dorman here that's top three in the region, helped to decide who's going to end up getting top seed heading into the playoffs here as they go to win that region title, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's always a big game between Burns and Dorman. Dorman's always been good at basketball. Burns was too, since Lane's taken over. It's a lot of it has to do with Lane Fowler too. I mean, Lane Fowler, when I believe I was in 10th grade, and Lane was a senior, and that was a very interesting year of Burns basketball. They went 27-2. They lost one game in the regular season. That group, Lane Fowler, a guy named Brian Gillespie, is a really good shooter. It's a forward named Tron Peak. There was a junior, Miko Harris, that was really good. And that group had come through D.R. Hill Middle School and went undefeated at the middle school level right before I got to D.R. Hill. And the coach Neely, who coached for them then, went to Greer and took the Greer varsity job from the middle school. So when I got to Deer Hill, I didn't play for him, but, then Lane and that group, they were just a special group. And, they lost one game during the regular season to Malden. And guess who played for Malden? Kevin Garnett,
yeah.
And then they got the championship game against Hillcrest Dalzell and lost and got down it was at Carolina Coliseum. I was there, got down 40-14. I'll never forget it. They launched an epic comeback, cut it all the way to 57-53, and they just couldn't get over the hump. I mean, that Dalzell team was too good, so that they were the state runners up. But I think recently Burns went to the state championship game in boys basketball, but they hadn't. I don't think they ever went. Maybe they did. Maybe I'm missing it from that year Lane played until he was the head coach. So he is one of the more legendary figures in Rebel basketball history, and certainly a heck of his coach. And his kid Colt is an outstanding player. They've just been synonymous with basketball in that area. So I was thrilled to death as a big homer for the Burns Rebels to get him, Burns Rebels, big homer like I am to hear that he was on there. And I'm sure Steve and why did I almost call him Phil? I got Phil on the brain, that whole kettleball thing. I'm like, dude. I'm just having some, I've got that video program. I'm probably going to send you a video later to make, It's not a. Oh, it's not anything.
You should reach out to Stella for some interesting picks during last night's workout session. They may already be on Instagram.
So that's the deal there, but certainly that's that was a good guess just for me personally. And you can check all that out. Be sure to like and subscribe to the Four Quarter Friday YouTube channel. It's actually growing quite a bit.
Yeah.
A lot of interest in the high school sports in our state. And it, I think it's grown by a couple of 100% since last Friday. And so it's youtube.com/@4QuarterFriday. The late night game guy, Matt Anderson, has returned. What's going on?
Sorry about that, guys. You know, when you're an insurance broker and a baby's born, you got to make sure that baby gets coverage. So had to talk to the family.
Nice.
That's awesome. It's like, where does insurance broker rank on the list of people they call after the baby's born? Are they like, was he just, he or she just born today? Were you same day or a little bit?
No. This baby was born back in December. You have 60 days to put the baby on the plan. And so the baby follows the mom. Then you have to backdate the premiums, all that. Normally I'm seeing my clients enough that I know when they're pregnant. So I have a general idea of when the baby's going to be born. And I honestly, when a baby's born, y'all have all done it. Y'all been around it. I mean, like the last thing you're thinking about is all the things that come with a baby. You're thinking about just, I want this baby to stop crying. Right. So yeah, we've been working on this for a little bit, but trying to get it across the finish line here now.
I got you. So that's pretty good. Well, Matt, obviously, the late night Gamecock show this week, with it being Super Bowl Sunday, you're just going to kind of let everybody watch Super Bowl, and you guys will be in when Monday for that?
Yeah, so we're doing a Monday night at 7. Really excited. We'll have our annual John Whittle on everything baseball. That'll be a good topic. We always love having John on. And then we got to talk a little bit about Lamont Paris. So we'll have that conversation. And then we got a really nice segment with Ramblin' and Gamblin', Justin Lyle, sportscapvalue.com. Excited for that. So we got a couple big days ahead of us. Get ready for it all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's and you can check out the Late Night Gamecock show on podcast. If you missed Justin's Ramblin' and Gamblin' last week and want to know what to do in the Super Bowl, if you missed Raphael earlier, Raphael was on, wasn't he, Phil?
Yes. Yeah. Tell him prop bets. Yeah.
No, good. I missed it. I got to go back and listen to it because I've got some things I need to do Sunday. I don't know that I'm going to
get to do Sunday. Got to get those bets.
I don't know if I'm going to go to my annual Super Bowl extravaganza or not. I'll tell you a funny story. It's at Tavern, you know, and you need to reserve seats, right? Because it's one price, all the drinks and all the food are included. It's awesome. But I will say this, like a few years back when Chris Stapleton, which is the version of the national anthem Jamie plays before the morning show, that was one of the best national anthems ever. Cause I love Chris Stapleton and it's just a different take on it. And he just wails. And I mean, it was awesome. And this is the one negative experience at a Super Bowl party at Tavern I've ever had. Nah. And it wasn't negative until the next day when people were talking about Chris Stapleton sung the national anthem. I thought it may be. So one of the regulars there, his son plays guitar. He's a very talented guy. And so instead of listening to Chris Stapleton, he got up on the table, Jimi Hendrix style, and played that version of the national anthem, which is cool in and of itself, right?
Right.
But I totally missed the Chris Stapleton national anthem, which is one of my favorite national anthems ever. So sometimes cool things happen and you miss other cool things, right? Like when I don't watch Gamecock basketball, they tend to play pretty well, Matt.
There's a heck of a lot of people not watching Gamecock basketball right now, and that's not working. Yeah,
I'm sitting at the first score update. I got 16-7 Gamecocks out in Austin. And then I turned it on, and Texas scored about 4 or 5 straight baskets. And then I turned it back off. So then I turned it back on. It was a 4-point game at halftime. And then I was just like, well, I'm just going to check the score. And then when it gets inside 2 minutes, if it's close, I'll tune in. I checked the score, and I thought I was heading towards a close game. Next thing you know, it gets inside 2 minutes, 8 points.
And they had an opportunity, man. They had an opportunity at the end, under 2 minutes. I think they got it down to 4 or 2, and then they just couldn't get a stop the last couple minutes. And you can't get stops, and you only have one guy that's putting the ball in the basket that particular night. It becomes pretty difficult to win the game. But hats off to Michi, man. I think he's up to 24th all-time leading scorer for the Carolina Gamecocks now. I think he's at, I can't remember how many points it is, but I was doing the math and I was like, okay, he's got a 30 burger now. He's got to be climbing up some ranks. And yeah, he's 24th now. I was texting with Alex during the game. What could have been last year if Michi had not transferred to Ohio State? Because
Whoa, stop. Just stop. Shut your filthy mouth. Because, and I'm going to tell you why. I was literally just about to fire that question at you. I cannot, really? I honestly cannot believe it. I was about to say that. Well, I was about to say, hey, Matt, last year's team, let's talk about last year's team. What if Michi had stayed? Because I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, last year's team kind of needed a guard. They didn't have a guard. And I was like, whoa, dude, that blows me away. Matt and I are on the same wavelength.
Yes.
How about that? So anyway, yeah, that's a question. I was just like, that's hilarious, dude. Go ahead. By the way,
so
I got the
I got to shut your
filthy mouth from Phil's wife. She says that when you say something funny. It's like, shut up, man. Come on. Like, oh, shut up. You know, that in case you were wondering, Matt.
So looking at it, I did some math here. Basically, the Gamecocks had like, I don't know, like 8 losses last year by single digits. And, you know, you can't assume that, you know, Michi averaging double figures would have won all of those games, because we all know Michi can shoot you out of a game if he feels like it that particular night or the ball's not dropping. But, I mean, the Gamecocks had 2 SEC wins last year. They lost 8 games by single digits. You say that Michi wins all those games scoring enough points, and all of a sudden you're looking at 10 SEC wins, back-to-back 10 win seasons in the SEC for Lamont Paris. You're looking at what the SEC last year, you're probably looking at.
They'd have gone to the tournament. Seed.
Yeah. You might be
looking at five Oklahoma seeds. Was 6
seed to a 5 seed to a, I mean, if you look at like the athleticism and the post defense that's missing this year, they would have had last year with Nick Pringle
Colin Murray Boyles.
Yeah, why am I blanking on CMB? I just had CMB in my head. I mean, maybe all of that's different and the Gamecocks are a 4 seed and, you know, they still didn't have a true point, but it's one of those things, what could have been? Because I told Alex, I'm just mad at Michi, because if he had just stayed, maybe Lamont Paris would be in a completely different situation right now.
Yeah, well, hindsight's always 20/20, man, and I understood why he went back. I mean, his family, closer to his family and stuff. But, you know, it kind of goes to show you, sometimes when you find home, it's home, and you don't need to go back to the former home. You know, sometimes home becomes somewhere else and not where you're from necessarily. Because, for whatever reason, it just did not work out at Ohio State for him the second time around. And he's doing some good things. You know, it's not his fault the team is like it is. He's doing good Michi things, and he's doing, well, Michi shoots you out of a game things at times, but he's still hustling and trying. And, you know,
got the Gamecocks out of any games this year. I mean, he's been pretty efficient. Yeah. And maybe if that could have been the case last year with the, you know, you had a Batman and Robin situation, potentially with CMB and Michi, and maybe things would have been different, but they're not, and now you're looking at 4 SEC wins over the last 2 years, and that's including the SEC tournament. Lost to Arkansas last year in the SEC tournament. It's something else, man. Basketball is funny like that, y'all. I mean, you got to hit it right.
Krieger says, Matt, isn't Big Mike much better than the way he's playing this season? Why isn't he more aggressive? Are you talking about Shar jams?
Yeah. Now, honestly, Craig, you know my stance on this, I think, because you always are tuning in to Sunday night. I think Mike could be much better than he is. If I was in Mike's head, I'd be driving every possession I had touched the ball. You're 6'10", 6'11". Get downhill, you're tall enough, you're a good enough passer, you can finish, you can dunk. I don't know if Mike's being used correctly. I don't know if that's Lamont's fault. It might just be something that some players never get comfortable with that. I mean, when I was in high school, I wasn't a slasher. When I started playing against people that weren't as quite as good as me in intramurals at South Carolina, I became a slasher and became pretty good at it. I mean, you got to find that comfort level, and he's obviously stepping up his level of competition in the SEC, and that's hard to teach a dog new tricks, honestly, and you got to have that inside you. But I think Mike's best game of the year was that Georgia game at home. I thought he played fantastic, thought he was going to turn a corner. Hasn't yet, but he could be so much better, honestly.
That's happened this year. The individual players are up and down. Elijah Strong has a good game one game. The next game just looks like he has no idea how to play basketball. Kobe Knox, they're all up and down. It's inconsistent. That's called a bad – it's called a not-so-good team.
It's crazy. I pulled the numbers on Elijah the other day, just I was curious. And he was averaging like 1.08 points per shot attempt. Like, for as a high volume shooter as he is in this offense, that's not a good number. You want to be like 1.2, 1.3, and he's just not there. Because when you take that, you're basically taking points divided by shot attempts. And, you know, normally those guys can get to the free throw line. That's why Michi's like as high as he is, because he's been so effective at getting to the free throw line and making baskets, you know, those easy points. But yeah, this team, man, it's hard because they're just, I don't know what the concept was. I mean, I put something on the Big Spur the other day that maybe he thought that Michi and Mike would be the slashers to get that ball movement and getting it kicking around the horn, and maybe that makes easier three-pointers. But and they started to do that. I mean, if you look at the beginning of the game against Texas, they were driving like crazy and they were getting baskets. And I started taking videos and sending it to Alex, like, this is what I've been screaming about the entire season. And it's slow burn, y'all. Maybe they'll turn it on at the end. But JC, you had a good point. All these other teams are fighting for NCAA tournament position, and they're not just going to roll over and die for South Carolina.
No, they need to they need the wins, because there's, I mean, the SEC is tough again. I'm not going to sit here and say it's as good as it was last year by any stretch. It may still be the number one conference, but
it is.
I mean, you look at it, dude. Missouri's fans were a little upset at the beginning of the year, but they've turned it around, and they're 5-4, so they're right in the mix.
I mean, Ole Miss over Florida and Kentucky.
Yeah, Ole Miss has kind of slipped. You know, let's see who the Gamecocks have coming up. So, Missouri this weekend, and it's so they got Mizzou at home Saturday, high noon. You know, Missouri's getting to win. Alabama certainly in the hunting. So go Missouri at Alabama at Florida. Mississippi State would be an opportunity. Kentucky at home, probably not happening. At Georgia's probably not happening. Tennessee at Ole Miss. So there's what? How many games you feel like, just looking at it, not to say they can't pull an upset or win several, but you just look at it, who do you really feel good about beating? Mississippi State at home, maybe.
No, JC, nobody do you feel good about beating. Like, there's no one on the schedule that's like, okay, that should be a win. It's like, this could be a win. That's the issue that you have here. And look, you know, when the fans get to this point where it's just they don't care, like, they want the Gamecocks to win because they love the Gamecocks, but if they lose, they're looking at what could be next year with a different coaching staff potentially. And that's happened at every Carolina basketball coach's end of tenure, as far as I can remember. Eventually, this apathy sets in, and it could get really ugly, y'all, because, I mean, even the winnable games, you might say, like Ole Miss is on the road, like you mentioned. Mississippi State and Missouri are the two that I think maybe happen, but they're very big maybes.
Let's say they lose out. Okay. So what you're looking at that point is 4 years under Lamont Paris, 11-21, 26-8, 12-20, 11-21. There's not been a worse stretch of South Carolina basketball since before Frank McGuire got to South Carolina. There's been some bad stretches, like the last three years of Horn and first 2 years of Frank Martin. There were some – but even Frank's second team, which was deficient, pulled some upsets in the SEC tournament, went all the way to the dang quarters. But you just, you know, South Carolina's 4-26 in their last 30 SEC games. They're 7-33 against power conference competition their last 40 games. I mean, it's just bad. I mean, it's not, you know, and we could talk about the why and all that. There's reasons for it. But at this point, it's just, that's an unfixable number as far as when you're talking about, you know, what you're going to do at the crossroads. And it's
Let me just give you, a little bit here, JC, because I don't think I'll have an opportunity to get all the way to it on Sunday night show. But when you look, and this is up to date now. Since Lamont Parrish became the head coach of South Carolina, 40-plus point losses, 5. 30-39 point losses, 4. 20-29 point losses, 7. 11-19 point losses, 8. Single-digit losses, 22. Now we're going to get to the wins, y'all. Single-digit wins, 13. 10-19 point wins, 9. Has not beat an SEC team by 20-plus points in his entire tenure. And has a total of 16 games where he's lost by 20 points, at least 20 points. So that's it's when you drill it down to brass tacks, y'all, there's nothing on this coaching resume that looks good outside of 1 year. And in that year, I mean, just looking at it, they had 1, 2, 6, 7, they had 8, 9 of their wins in the SEC play were by 10 plus points. That's all of them. So, I mean, that's it. You had one. Is it a flash in the pan? Is it SEC Coach of the Year that can figure it out? Or is it the last 2 years what it's going to be? I don't know.
Or that they found – they were fortunate in the portal to get B.J. Mack and Talon Cooper. And
yeah, it's a flash in the pan. Like that bringing in the right guys that maybe you weren't sold. I mean, Gamecock Nation was not sold on B.J. Mack or Talon Cooper coming in when they were announced as transfers. So who was right? I don't know.
And they've gotten guys that are supposed to, you know, I think number one, I don't necessarily always think you have to have a quote unquote true point guard. People hammer that. I agree. I don't necessarily always think you have to have that because PJ Dozier didn't always play point guard. And sometimes Thornwell brought it up the court. Sometimes and Felder was in and they went to the Final Four. Okay. But I do think that's there's a difference between not having a true point guard and not having a point guard. And heading in, I didn't mind that Meachie was going to be the point guard. I told Phil the other day, maybe you were on here, I'd probably play Scarf Jams at point guard and let him create and do exactly what you and Kreger want him to do. But they're not struggling to bring the ball up the court like they did last year. But I think that's hurt him. I think the lack of post this year has been, and just some very disappointing players that just, and I don't know, you know, some of this, no matter who the coach was, could have easily happened, but head coaches, you are what your resume says it is. And your ability to remain employed and get paid and life-changing money is based on your ability to win. I don't think anybody, based on last season and being retained and all that, I don't think anybody, you know, looks at it and goes, well, you know, you only made the NIT or whatever. If you win 17 games, you're fired. Although they did fire Frank because of that. Mm-hmm. Or not because of that, that's a long story. But I just don't think you could lose. I don't think if you're leadership at South Carolina that you can lose like this and say, well, it's just this structural thing or it's this money thing. And it's a, you know, good coach, lack of money. That's kind of what happened last year, right? In a lot of ways, you know, they couldn't quite get the point guard in and the league was really good. There were tangible reasons last season. This year, it's a disaster and it's not getting any better. And, you know, in coaching, sometimes when you have a season that's bad, that may not even be your fault. you know, one with a lot of injuries and things like that.
The problem
you could, you could survive it, Matt. You could survive it. You could not get fired. But that does. But then, if you have a bottoming out year like this year, where you just made some mistakes and my bad, well, that injury year or that year like last year where you're kind of behind the eight ball, you don't get that the next one. But go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're absolutely right. But you just can't. You can't be what I consider competitive and, you know, max three possession games, win or lose. You can't be that 35% of the time in your conference, like just straight up competitive. Like that's a very big issue. And look, if South Carolina moves on from Lamont Paris, it'll be a top 10 buyout in college basketball history. So money's relative, I get, and there's going to be a heck of a lot more coaches that get fired in the next 3 to 5 years that'll surpass Lamont Paris's buyout number if coaching salaries continue to go the way they are going. So you might not be in the top 10 very long, but you know, you got to make that decision. And I mean, Jeremiah Donati has a big decision to make because personally, I think Lamont Paris is a good basketball coach, a really, really good basketball coach. But this is 2 years in a row where in an era when you have to evolve like every other college basketball coach in the country and find ways to win. I mean, South Carolina could be in a better position next year with a new coach, even with a big buyout and with the NIL money that was spent this year. Like, it's just roster construction has to be a part of your job, not just coaching, you know, that 5-6 months out of the year when you have the kids working out and training and playing the games. Like, there's more to being a head coach. And if you can't do it, you got to put the people in place around you to make it happen. And, I mean, that's why NBA coaches have GMs. And they say, hey, you're a heck of a basketball coach. I don't want you to recruit anybody. We might bring you in to say, hey, this free agent, let's tell them how they're going to fit in your offense and what the role is and see if they like it. You know, tell them everything they want to hear. But at the end of the day, like, you're not – the coach isn't constructing the team. So,
yeah, this is weird because these guys – this roster on its face should be good for Lamont Paris and the style of basketball he plays. That this should be a good – just based on skill set, right?
Well, the problem is that the rest of the SEC doesn't let you play that game that you want to play. That's the problem. The SEC isn't going to allow you to play this slow, methodical basketball that gets the open shot. It's too fast. It's too many possessions. It's too many better athletes. And that's just the problem.
Yeah. Still, though, you're not going to be – South Carolina's never going to be able to out-athlete. And I thought they out-basketballed people 2 years ago, but maybe that was just a special group. Who knows?
Some of those Eddie Fogler teams could go athlete for athlete. I mean, just from a pure athleticism standpoint, and then they put now,
every one of Frank's teams was athletically equal to everybody. It was just sometimes they struggle with the basketball part of it, like shooting. you know,
putting the ball through the hoop aspect of the game.
Dave Odom's teams had great athletes. Brandon Wallace and Ronaldo Balkman and Torrance Kinsey all were on this, and Trey Kelly all were on the same team. I mean,
I remember Sam Muldrow trying to guard that dude in high school.
all those players were athletic, but you're always going to run into a Kentucky or a Florida under Billy Donovan, or now in Arkansas, or now half the teams in the league. We're okay. You want an athlete, that's fine, but they have athletes over there that are great athletes, but also can shoot and score and dribble and all that.
And they're all top 100 recruits, top 150 recruits.
I believe, though, that if you look at it, though, it's not impossible. You got to find the balance. You got to kind of do what Mark Binington's done at Vandy. You know, I mean, Vandy was picked below. They were picked last year. They went to the tournament. Now look at them this year. And they build the momentum and they keep going. Something like that, dude. I mean, I don't know. I don't know exactly.
Dude, there's an interesting story about the Tanner kid that's, you know, awesome at Vanderbilt right now. I love him, the point guard. And he was a three-star, sub-150 player, maybe hovering around 150, 200. And when Byington got there to Vanderbilt, he was like, I don't know nothing about this kid. He was a local kid from Brentwood. And basically, he was ready to cut him loose, being like, nah, I'm going to try and bring in some transfers. And the people that were still around the coaches' offices and the basketball program after the coaching change was made was like, no. Like, this kid would come in as a high schooler and play pickup with our basketball team, and he would be the best player on the court. at different points in time. He's just a kid that didn't get the recruiting momentum. And then if you look at it as a freshman, he had the most minutes played. He played in the highest, what was it? He had the ball in his hands the highest percentage of any player on Vanderbilt last year in under five in games in the last 5 minutes. And like sometimes you just find that dude. That's what I'm saying, JC. Like on what you said, like you can find the high school guys. Like that kid was there and nobody recruited him. And look at him now. He's probably going to be first team all SEC as a sophomore.
Nobody recruited Colin Murray Boyles either, you know? So
yeah,
I don't really know how to put my finger on it, but other than this program has not been good, this job is not very good. I do agree it's right now the worst job in the SEC.
But Alex asked that the other night too.
It's never been this bad. Well, at the top part of that rankings, there's some things I don't agree with. I think a lot of coaches are freaked out about NIL right now. And they associate Texas with money. But I think Florida's a better basketball job than Texas. Just because of that school's ability to attract players. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, we could talk about that. But anyway, yeah. Enough basketball. We're going to shift gears. We're going to talk a little football and then get Deputy Smitty in at the top of the hour. Quick break, then a short segment. Then we'll be back with the final hour of the week on the show. With a late night Gamecock, the Mad Dog, Deputy Smitty coming up. You take a break and be right back.
Hey, this is Cornbread Cowboy, and you're listening to the show. We'll be right back.
Palm Casual Patio Furniture are proud supporters of our Gamecocks. We have been making and supplying the highest quality outdoor furniture you can find for almost 5 decades. If you use your outdoor space to watch the Gamecocks, make it the best it can be. Visit palmcasual.com or visit one of our 4 locations in South Carolina. Go Gamecocks!
Looking for a new car? You need to think about a Kia. If you're in the market for an SUV, consider the new Kia Telluride or the new Kia Sorento. They're big, they're strong, and loaded with tech for thousands less than Honda or Toyota. You'll see the difference right away, and you get double the warranty. Plus, you get the JT's Advantage million mile warranty and about 1,000 other things you have to see to believe.
If you want the biggest bang for your buck, it's time to think about a new JT's Kia.
We're serious about saving you money.
The Aventon Adventure 2 takes the same basic design as the original Aventon Adventure, making it an adventure bike designed to take you places that typical roads just don't reach, allowing you to ride whatever terrain you want based on your whims of the day. Look at what you're getting. Hydraulic disc brakes, torque sensor for responsive pedal assist, great LED lighting, suspension, a beautifully welded frame with excellent build quality, included rear rack, included fenders. The list just keeps going on.
Visit electricbikescharleston.com for more.
2026 is the year of the Barn Dominium, and the Barn Dominium Company wants to help you build your dream home for your family. Make your dream a reality. Change your life today. Visit thebarndominiumco.com. That's thebarndominiumco.com for floor plans, photo galleries, locations, and to learn more about us. Watch JC and Morgan every week on the Chief Sports Network. Now back to ITG.
Pinpoint Doppler 1 basically means that we're going to be exact in this weather forecast here, and we're going to nail it down perfectly. So over here, We have Mule Shoe. So those folks in Mule Shoe, you can pretty well go to the bank with what you hear here. On Friday, we're looking at cooler than normal temperatures, and it's going to be windy, but windy's not all bad because other teams that try to throw the ball don't practice in the wind that we do. So therefore, we can pass. They won't be able to. So we like that. 25-mile-an-hour winds are ideal, but maybe higher than that. But we'll still fight through it. Saturday, 71 degrees, partly cloudy. And then for those of you that don't have calendars at home, Sunday will be the first day of May. And so you might circle that. It says fireworks late, so later in the day. Could be some thunderstorms, but, you know, this is, after all, West Texas, so I wouldn't count on it. Now, on Monday, it says bad stuff, serious storms. Well, you're going to be dead in 100 years anyway. Live dangerously. I would go opposite of that. I mean, that's just too strong, too much. It says bad weather, and the thing on the screen there is just a little too sure of it for my taste. Me, personally, expect sun. Go out there, expect sun, have a good time, and if you run into the bad stuff, don't let that hamper your day. Don't be a coward. Stay out in it. Still enjoy the day.
Just to be.
I ran across that this morning in honor of National Weather Person's Day yesterday. Somebody had posted that about with Mike Leach, and of course, we will always find room for Mike Leach on this program whenever we can. So, shout out to Mike when he was at Texas Tech doing a West Texas weather report. It goes on. It's actually 6 minutes worth. I thought that was a little long, so I found one that was a little tighter than 6 minutes.
Well, I can tell you what I love about it is when he's like, don't be a coward, go out in the weather. It's kind of like in Caddyshack, like, the good Lord wouldn't strike me down on the best round of my life.
That's right. Yeah. He's like, oh, you're going to be dead in 100 years anyway, so who cares? Go out there and live your life. Oh, you're muted, JC.
We miss him every day.
Crazy. Yeah, man.
Coach, golly. What a God. I didn't even care about him talking football. I mean, I'd listen to it, but if I wanted to hear some insightful football stuff, I'd listen to Nick Saban or Will Muschamp. I just listened to Leach for the off topic. It was awesome.
Yeah. So good.
So good. Jay Frew in the ITG chat box says, we have to go get a proven winner and not a 1 year winning. Yeah. That's been a kind of a red flag for me, I guess, the last two. Number one, and unfortunately, I don't know what the pool, you know, when you hire a mid-major coach in basketball, Matt, what I've noticed is it's like there's a lot of them that get opportunities, right? It's more than football. But when you hire a mid-major coach, it's like spinning its wheel of fortune. You just don't know. I mean, there's some guys, but the ones I've noticed who really do well once they get that next, they go up to that next level, are the guys that have either been someplace 3 or 4 years and won every single year, or they took over a bad mid-major program and built it within 2 years to a winner. You know, Lamont did have COVID he had to deal with, and he did ultimately win. But if you look at Lamont Paris's resume and Darren Horn's resume, both, they were both at what I consider to be really good mid-major jobs in Chattanooga and Western Kentucky. And Western Kentucky, once upon a time, went to the Final Four. But I kind of look at it and it's like, well, he got to the, you know, Sweet 16 that 1 year, but he was I think they were a 12 seed, got matched up with Drake in the first round. And then San Diego pulled the upset in the 4-13 game, or maybe it was reverse. But Drake, I mean, they had basically played a mid-major in the first round that was really good. And then they got promptly thumped, and then he took the South Carolina job. Yeah, Lamont almost knocked off Illinois in the first round. It was a one-point game. So that wasn't so bad, but, you know, he kind of took his – they kind of went up and down a little bit, and I don't know. You look at the coaches that have worked out here at Bigley, Eddie Fogler, his 4 years at Vanderbilt. They won the NIT. Then they went to the NCAAs. Then they went back to the NIT. Back then, the NIT was actually pretty good. It was actually, if you made the NIT, you were doing well. Before, guess what? The NCAA purchased the tournament and completely screwed it up. And now it's what? It's nothing. And then his final year, Vanderbilt won the SEC championship and went to the Sweet 16. Then he took South Carolina. Dave Odom, who, by the way, I didn't realize he won an NIT championship at Wake Forest as well, was kind of on, like, they went to like 7-8 straight NCAA tournaments at Wake. He was really a great coach at Wake when he took over. They were not good before he got there, and he turned them into a contender in the ACC. So I guess that was within his war chest of credibility. But as Mike Morgan's pointed out, he's kind of on the downside, the back nine of his career. And they went to 3 straight NITs. And then his last year at Wake, they went, and I'll never forget, this is why I was against the hire and wanted Bobby Cremins. They played Butler in the first round, and Wake was, it wasn't like those Rodney Rogers teams, Randolph Childress, Tim Duncan teams. It was a little different. They're more defense, kind of like some of his Carolina teams. I looked up halftime, first round of the 7-10 game in the NCAA tournament. They're down 41-9. End up losing 92-60. Similarly, he only scored 43 points against Memphis when he was in the tournament at South Carolina. And sometimes he would gear that team down when they really needed to kind of run and play loose. But, you know, he did. Dave Odom was okay in the grand scheme of things. And then Frank Martin, who went to the Final Four, you know, Martin and Fogler are the only two coaches to really do something big here. Every one of them's had a good season. Frank was 4 NCAA tournaments, never got beat in the first round, and had 1 NIT in his 5 years at K-State. That's the type of resume I think you want to look for. The 15 different times people have wanted to hire Greg Marshall, I thought that Greg Marshall's resume at Winthrop was perfect because he never lost there. I mean, they never had it. They may have had a season where they didn't make the tournament. Maybe they got bounced in the Big South, but they were always up there. And those guys, in my experience, tend to work out a little better than the guys that have just they parlayed one season into a better job. What say you?
I mean, it's hard. Like, I think that when you look at it like an established guy, you have to look at so much more now than you had to 10 years ago. Like, an established guy 10 years ago had an identity, knew what his program was about, was retaining guys 3-4 years, you know, maybe somebody went pro, that kind of thing. But you just didn't have all this turnover. So when you look at the established guys and the guys that you can realistically get, it becomes harder because, well, how have they done in the free transfer era? How have they done in NIL? What are their connections? You know, how's their recruiting been year over year? What's their player retention like? You have to look at all of that. And that what makes it even harder for me to even identify a mid-major coach if you want to go like the Darren Horn or Lamont Paris route, because the last 3 years, every mid-major coach that has a player worth anything is gone as soon as they're identified. It's just gone. That was not the case for years. That's why you had, you know, Wichita State and Greg Marshall, how he got that job, you know, how well he did at, Winthrop, because he had a system, he had a program, he had the recruiting ties, he could do it. And now, is that even going to work? I mean, I'm not even saying that you have to go get a sitting head coach. I think you could even go to the assistant coach level. I mean, I think that the two UConn guys, Luke Murray and Kamani Young, they're going to be head coaches soon, and they're not going to be head coaches at Winthrop. So if you want to go that route of a team that the guys have been a part of the coaching staff for years, continued success, knows the NIL landscape now, because as assistant coaches, I promise you, they are dealing with the bag men. They're dealing with the handlers. They're dealing with the agents. The head coach isn't doing all of that. So at least find experience there. But there are a handful of high major assistants that I would consider. I mean, just one of them off the top of my head is Griff Aldrich. He was at Longwood, had three straight 20-win seasons. Longwood took Longwood Racers to the NCAA or Longwood Lancers to the NCAA tournament two times recently in 2022 and 2024. Now he's the associate head coach of Virginia under Ryan Odom. So if you want to have a little bit of a Dave Odom route there, but I would just find the coach that knows how to play the game now. The Jimmys and the Joes are worth more than the offensive-minded head coach, the defensive-minded head coach. And it happened in football. It's happening in basketball. I would not want to be an AD trying to find my next head coach anytime soon at the high major level because it is honestly a crapshoot. So I don't know which way you go if you do make a change. I mean, I'll put together a hot list if we ever get to that point, guys that I would feel really strongly about. But there's mid-majors all over the place that I think would be good, and they have a track record over the last 3 years. If I'm looking at a mid-major coach, it's not someone that's been in a mid-major for 10 to 15 years. I'm looking at a guy that – well, I'm not looking at the success of the last 10 to 15 years. I'm looking at the success of the last 3 years. I want to see a winning conference record. I want to see going to the semifinals of the conference tournament. I want to see NCAA tournament bids. It's hard, y'all. It's hard in the streets.
I like Josh Schertz from St. Louis. This dude won
The rest of the world too.
337-69 at Lincoln Memorial. Won at Indiana State more than they ever have since Larry Bird was there, I think. And he's 21, 20 something and one at St. Louis this season. So.
There's a couple of them out there. People don't sleep on Chris Mack. At Charleston, if you want to go the retread route of a guy who's been a high major coach at Xavier, Louisville, some guy that has in-state ties right now because he's been at Charleston a couple of years, you can do a heck of a lot worse than Chris Mack if you're just trying to get this program off the doormat of the SEC. Chris Mack will win. He might not go to the tournament every year. He might not win the SEC championship. He might not win a Final Four, get to a Final Four national championship. But Chris Mack, if you like Frank Martin, Chris Mack is Frank Martin plus a little bit. So I'd take Chris Mack in a heartbeat.
Wait. By the way, St. Louis is 22-1.
It would just beat Davidson. We're down by 9, and they're winning by 9. Oh, how about that? They had 11 points in the first 3 minutes of that game against Davidson. What would that look like in South Carolina?
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, so we'll be back after this. We got to get Deputy Smitty. Going to talk a little football. So Matt, Mad Dog, prepare your questions for the deputy. Really? Can't wait to get him in here. Been looking forward to this all week. We'll be back after this on the show.
2026 is the year of the Barn Dominium, and the Barn Dominium Company wants to help you build your dream home for your family. Make your dream a reality. Change your life today. Visit thebarndominiumco.com. That's thebarndominiumco.com for floor plans, photo galleries, locations, and to learn more about us.
Welcome to SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chief Sports Network. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on the Chief Sports app, the Chief Sports YouTube channel, and on our X accounts. Hosted by Rob Williams and Craig McMichael, talking the week that was and what's to come in the SEC. Join us every week for SEC Sunday Night on the Chief Sports Network.
Oh, man, the building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
Welcome to Dry Space Crawl Space Solutions. Basement crawl space encapsulation designed for your specific needs. Your crawl space can be susceptible to all sorts of issues, including moisture buildup, mold growth, and structural damage if not cared for properly. Let our trained experts provide basement crawl space encapsulation solutions to protect your home, improve air quality, and enhance energy efficiency.
Schedule your consultation today for a safer, healthier space at dryspacecs.com. Dry Space Crawl Space Solutions, proud supporters of your South Carolina Gamecocks.
Tune in every Friday at 9 a.m. to the Four Quarter Friday High School Show on the Chief Sports Network. Palm Casual Patio Furniture presents our coverage of South Carolina baseball and softball. Visit palmcasual.com today. Make your outdoor space the best it can be. Go Gamecocks! New year, better floors. Now is the time. Refinish your hardwood floors with Recoat Revolution. Beautiful like new floors in just one day. No dust, affordable, and five stars. Give us a call in South Carolina, 803-397-1365. Or visit us at RecoatRevolution.com. Go Gamecocks!
Gamecock Traditions is your one-stop shop for all things South Carolina. From apparel to tailgating, children's clothing to kitchenware, jewelry, or even gift cards. If it exists, it exists at Gamecock Traditions. Ship it to your home via GamecockTraditions.com or go see our friends in Lexington. Gamecock Traditions, a family tradition. Go Gamecocks.
Sell your quality sports and fitness equipment to Play It Again Sports and get paid. Recycling your in-demand sports gear keeps it available in your community. Sell, buy, trade, and win with Play It Again
Sports! And now, the show goes on.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to Inside the Gamecocks, the show. Rolling on here into the second hour of our Friday episode. We are joined now by Deputy Smitty. We get to talk some football, man. Good to have you in. Got Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock, in here. Going to talk some football with us too, man. But been too long. Good to have you back.
Thank you guys for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Always. Sweet. We JC brought something up. We'll just clear this right out of the air.
Yeah, we got a question. We think we've identified you on the Gamecock graffiti line. Did you ever call the Gamecock graffiti line back during the season by any chance?
Mm-mm.
All right, that was somebody else.
That's somebody else.
It sounded like you. He's from the upstate. He coached, and he seemed to know a lot about, you know, X's and O's. And
really?
It was an epic call, and I thought his name was Cam, because anyway, because I have a brother named Cam, and I always say that whenever I heard people named Cameron. But it wasn't him. So we need to keep tracking that guy.
We'll keep looking.
So anyway, man, I've been looking forward to this for a while. I've been seeing your work. For those that don't follow it, you're missing something. It's at Deputy Smitty on Instagram and on X and on YouTube. It's at Smitty Sports Network. Mm-hmm. So please check that out. Go like that page. Follow. You won't be sad. If you like the Carolina Panthers, it's great. If you like the Gamecocks, it's great. If you just like football, it's great. And other things that he does with gaming and things like that's outstanding. This transfer portal class, I know you've been looking through it. And I was really intrigued off the top to ask you about Peak, Jacarius Peak from NC State.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of what he brings to the table. You know, he's not – like most of the time when people think about big time offensive tackles, you know, everybody is thinking, especially in the recruiting world, it's like 6'6", 6'7", whatever. He's not, he's 6'4". Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of daggum good tackles out there that are 6'4". What in your opinion sets him apart from maybe the rest of the, because obviously he's like number one in the portal, or about, at least according to some, what sets him apart from your normal old run of the mill college tackle?
I mean, I just, you know, from what I've seen of, and I've seen about half his games, you know, or so from last year. I haven't even got through all of it yet. I mean, to me, it's a big time pickup getting him to come in. and just his athleticism. I mean, honestly, watching it, and watching us the last couple of years, you see some guys kind of just stumbling around a lot, falling down for some whatever reason. I don't know. I'm not trying to talk bad about anybody, but he's just athletic, always on his feet, finishing plays. I put a video out on one of the plays to where, honestly, watching us the last couple of years, for whatever reason, it would have been a play that we got washed out of there and whatnot. And the way that he kind of just come off one guy, went to another guy, and it opened up a clear lane for NC State, you know, a touchdown right there. You know, and I see that repeatedly from him. And so I don't know. I like him. Offensive line's never kind of been my go-to stuff, but I'm actually getting more and more intrigued about it. The more I watch it, and Sean Elliott's been really good as far as, I mean, I can shoot Elliott a message and show him a picture or clip and say, educate me. Why are you doing this? Because I saw some things that Elliott did that Teasley wasn't doing. So when Elliott took over, and so I was like, well, this wasn't going on here, you know, so what's going on? And Elliott would let me know. And so I've been learning a lot from Sean, and Sean is great. I kind of curious now. I mean, what are we doing with Josiah Thompson now that Peak's here? Is he just going to flip to the right side?
That was my second question for you. I teed that up. Mm-hmm. This is the second time that's happened today because Matt earlier said something about basketball that I was going to ask. Obviously, my brain must be an open wavelength today.
You're Phil. In sync.
I'm in sync with everybody.
The ether with your
today. But no, that was my next question because this may sound like sacrilege. Peak played right tackle for NC State for a while and was really good at it. Mm-hmm. That said, I sure would feel really good about him being the left tackle because that's the blind side, and that's where you're supposed to have your guy. I'm pretty sure, just based on the way things are in recruiting now, he'll play left tackle. Josiah at right, I don't mind it. I don't think it's that hard of a transition to make either, especially in this offense. And he can always go back to left next year, or he could be the one at right or the two at left.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, your thoughts on that, because they do have other options at right tackle. Mm-hmm. I think Damola Ajidahun, the redshirt freshman, he's still young, but they really like him. Yep. A lot out there, and then they signed some guys from the portal. But yeah, your thoughts on that, like that transition, and if that would make sense.
I honestly have a hard time picturing our offensive line next year with Josiah Thompson not starting. And I know that people look at that and say, well, he took a step back this past year. I mean, there could be 100 different reasons as to why that happened, you know. And I feel like you brought Peak in to be your left tackle, I would imagine. I mean, you bring him in. He is your left tackle. And I just have a hard time picturing Josiah not being on the start line, especially entering the portal and coming back. Obviously, I don't think he would have came back if he didn't feel he was going to start anyway. And I don't know the whole situation as to why he went in and why he come out. But I'm glad that he's back. I just don't see our offensive line next year rolling out five and Josiah's not one of the five.
Yeah. And to me, Smitty, I don't know that he's a guy that would be good on the interior because of his body type. Mm-hmm. And leverage and things like that. I mean, I wouldn't think he'd be a candidate. Stranger things have happened. I just don't see him sliding inside.
I don't either. I think his position is either right or left. And if you got Peak in there to the left, then to me he's got to slide to the right unless he gets beat out with somebody. But, I mean, if we have that type of competition where guys are beating guys out, I mean, look, I'm all for it. I mean, we've definitely need to ramp up that unit. It's been a struggle the last couple of years, to say the least. And, I mean, dude, I was watching the North Carolina game from 23 the other day.
Man,
some of the throws that Rattler was making, and guys were just draped all over him in his face. I'm like, man, this has been a struggle for the last. I mean, I know 24 they were a little bit better, or whatnot. You know, you had Sellers getting out of a lot of that stuff. I mean, you go back to that 24 Texas A&M game. I mean, Sellers was just shrugging guys off left and right. So I'm very excited about the guys we have brought in, and from what we have, you know, kind of coming back, which ain't much coming back, but you know, you do got Josiah and you got Shed and some other guys, but I'm excited for that group. I really think there's going to be a big improvement. I also think with the new offense as well, it's going to help them out. Maybe get the ball out a little bit quicker. So you don't have to sit there and hold your blocks up as long or whatnot. But I'm excited about that group. I definitely think it's going to be probably, I would maybe on paper, has to be the best under Shane performing wise in 26. You know, because that unit, it's just kind of struggled. You know, I hate to say it, but it has. And so definitely think this year could be really good with Bryles and the guys that we have brought in. There's a, what I love about it, there's a lot of guys that's played a lot of snaps. And
that's where I was going with the next.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought Josiah played better when he had an established guy beside him on the interior, somebody that knew the assignments, knew what was going on, could support him when he needed support, be there beside him. And I think with this experience that you have coming in, if you throw him out to right tackle and you have a guy that has, I don't know, 1,000 snaps or whatever it is in college football playing right guard and understanding the system, a lot of the warts that people saw in Josiah Thompson might go away and he could revert back to freshman form, which could just be what he is, right?
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and you look at the guys that we brought in and the snaps that they played, I'm excited about that. I really am. I mean, I'm not saying that we're going to be the Indiana as this year, but look at Indiana. And I mean, those guys were filled with a roster of a lot of snaps under their belt. So I am excited about that, that these guys are, you know, as good as what I expect, you know, like a Darius Gray to be, I would be fine if I don't see him rolling out there week one. I mean, because it seemed like every year we're rolling guys out there with zero snaps in week one. And so I would be fine with that. Now, if Gray's just that good, I'd love that as well. But yeah, I like the guys that have a lot of experience up there.
Well, Alex sent me a graphic, JC. I don't think I've talked to you about it. I want to get all y'all's take on it. But if you look at returning just statistics, South Carolina returns over 10,000 O-line snaps, 5,300 passing yards in their career, 1,900 rushing yards, 10,215 defensive snaps, and 563 tackles, which ranks number one on overall returning production in college football.
Yeah, according to dog underscore stats, which bless him for compiling that. That was amazing. But yeah, and dog stats sometimes makes mistakes. But all I like about him is he'll go and somebody will point out, oh, you made a mistake on this data here, and he'll go correct it. South Carolina had more offensive lineman snaps returning to their roster next year than anybody in the country. And then he got some more data. He's like, no, it's Virginia. And then he released what you're talking about with all the staff. He said, nah, it was definitely South Carolina. So South Carolina does have a lot of experienced guys. I like that on the offensive line. Coaches a lot of times talk about that. How many starts, how many snaps, all that. I think the more snaps, the better on offense. On that graphic, though, with regards to the defense, somebody did point out that, you know, maybe number of snaps on defense is not great because you want to get off the field. And if you're playing a bunch of snaps, maybe that's not good. But it's based on career experience, and I really dig it. Well, at wide receiver, we talked to Darren Usher the other day on the morning show, and I like what they did here, Smitty, with the portal, because you have a nice core group of young guys. And then they went older. Just about all the players they brought in. Nitro Tuggle going into his third year. He's kind of the youngest. DJ Black, Spartanburg County player, who was amazing when he was at Chapman.
Yep.
And really good at Limestone, too. He's older. Charlie Mullaly's in his fourth year. Jaden Gibson's in his fifth. And I know you broke Jaden down. But then you got these younger guys. And then Mazio Bennett and Nick Harbor in between. Nick's now old in his final year. I like that because while I love all the freshman receivers that are coming back, and I'm glad they brought them back, I think those guys, Ellis Johnson told me this one time about players in the SEC. He said, you know, this guy here, he can play in our league, but he can't make a difference. And he's like, that's the difference between good and great in the SEC. Can he play in the league? Yes, he's an SEC player, but can he make a difference? And I look at these young guys, and I think they all eventually will be at the point to make a difference, but you just don't know that. So getting that competition and those older, experienced guys, it almost acts as a like, okay, we're going to be fine either way. What do you think about the portal wide receiver haul? I actually think it's sneaky good, to be honest.
I do too. And honestly, I was going to try to get in Charlie last night, and I didn't get around to him because I'm curious about him coming out of Holy Cross. I mean, Holy Cross did produce a Jalen Coker, who now is really good for the Carolina Panthers. So, but Jaden Gibson, I was looking at him last night. I've known about him. If he can come back healthy, I know he's had some serious injuries, but if he can come back healthy, I mean, you're talking about a long, lengthy 6'5 that can run opposite of Nick Harbor, who we all know is long and lengthy and can run. I think that could be really, really good. Again, I don't know what he is health wise. I haven't heard anything about that. Do we know? Is he practicing in the spring? Is he full go? Is he?
I think so. I think his injury last year, he kind of left Oklahoma early.
Yes.
And he had a little bit of an off the field thing. So I don't know, but he's in.
Okay.
I think he will be full go. I mean, he's been out for a little while. They haven't had much game experience at all the last 2 years, but as a freshman, Beamer pointed it out that he was on his way to becoming a freshman All-American. Like you said.
Yeah. And when I was watching some of the stuff last night, you could see it. You could see the traits with him. I mean, just the guys that was kind of draped on him or whatnot, he comes down with the ball. You know, that's what I've been kind of watching the last couple of years, man, where, you know, Sellers puts a ball up for some guy and it's a 50-50 or whatnot, or it's in a tight window. And a lot of times you see it hit the ground or something. It's like, we got to start coming up with more of those. So I really like him. And then, I mean, you talk about another big body that you throw out there with Murph. I mean, that's three guys that are long, can run or whatnot. And then, you know, like we just talked about the younger guys, when you come to Mazio and Jaden, and I really do like this receiver core. And like I said, I haven't even dug into Charlie and whatnot, and I'm really curious about him. Haven't saw much, but I'm curious about him. There's a reason why we took him, so now I want to go dig in as to why. And I am excited about this wide receiver core. And Nick Harbor, I don't see why he's not a 1,000-yard receiver this year. I mean, just the growth that he took after having 1 year under his belt, as far as giving away track for a little bit, focusing straight on football, you saw it this year. I mean, it was, you know, I've been impressed with Nick. I've loved Nick. I've always been a fan of Nick, and I think he's going to have a monster year next year with this new system, with another year under his belt of nothing but football. I think the sky's the limit for Nick Harbor.
Phil, how many times last offseason did I say, I want to see him catch the ball, plant his feet, turn up field, and just smoke everybody.
And then turn
on. And it finally happened against A&M. And I was like, holy crap. There it is.
There it is.
And if you notice, that happens with Nick, man. Smitty, he like, okay, Missouri last year, he finally gets open deep. Now, the corner busted the coverage on the first one, but the second one was a nice fade pattern. And this year, all he did was go catch deep balls. You know, it's like if it happens for him once or twice, I mean, that's impressive. Because one thing I've learned about him, I know some people that know him and work with him, he works very, very, very hard. Like, nobody outworks Nick Harbor. And I agree with you. I think that he's set up to have that special final year. You mentioned the guys that go up and get it. I'm not sure, and maybe that comes this year for him, even though he is 6'5". I'm not sure that's his game so much as, like, he's not like Xavier, who'd go up and get it, Leggett, or back in the day, Alshon, or the best to ever do it, to go up and get it with Sidney Rice. Even Shai Smith, as a smaller guy, I thought was better at getting it in traffic. So I think Jaden Gibson's intriguing in that
With Harbor, it makes sense, though. His entire body has been trained to run fast in a straightforward motion.
Straightforward.
It's not to jump up, and he's not doing the high jump.
Not a jumper.
I would love to see that aspect of Nick's come around this year even more. I feel like you kind of saw it a little bit last year. Like, I mean, you go back to the Texas A&M game when it was fourth down after we got behind that last drive, and Sellers threw the ball on the sideline over there. Nick goes up and plucks it. That should play he got hurt on. He goes up and plucks it, keeps his foot in bound. I feel like, I mean, if he can keep evolving like that, I mean, you saw it first game with Virginia Tech on the corner route, which they end up saying was incomplete. I disagree with that.
That was a terrible call.
But if he could get more natural doing that, where he's just going up and just plucking, I mean, you'd love for it to go up like an Alshon or Sidney, but those guys were elite at doing it. I mean, they just made it look easy. Sidney Rice, one of the best ever. I mean, he only played 2 years here, and I love me some Sidney Rice.
Ooh, boy.
But yeah, if Nick can bring more of that to his game this year, I mean, how do you guard him? You know, like how do you guard him? I mean,
it's tough. And if you bracket him, and I think Carolina's got enough. And good luck trying to sit there pre-snap for 20 seconds and dissect it, because there's not going to be 20 seconds. They're just gonna
right.
And good luck with all that against this. If it works out, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, because I've been disappointed before. I thought one of the biggest keys, Smitty, to this portal class, it's probably the biggest one for me personally. You know, and it's my opinion, not, you know, besides you got to get numbers on the offensive line, and hopefully you got somebody like Peak, mission accomplished. I thought they had to get an option or two that was good at the edge opposite Dylan Stewart. And this is nothing against Brian Thomas Jr. Fantastic player, had a fantastic productive year. I didn't think he was ideal against the run. But I thought get somebody or two people over there that can step in. You don't have to rely on a Julian Walker or somebody like that, and take some heat off of him on the other side, and really make people prepare for both pass rushers. I thought Caleb Herring fit that role well. And then I think Kelby Collins is a potential big end on early downs, could fit that as well. Your thoughts about the edge group?
Yeah. I actually sent that to some friends the other day in a group. I told him, I said, this D-line this year can kind of come back to be sneaky good again. Like, you know, people in 24 didn't really know what you had, and then all of a sudden you're like, whoa. I think this group can kind of be like that as well. The more I watch Caleb, the more I like about him. And like you said, Collins is more that bigger end, set to edge, run game type thing. And so I like what we're doing on the D-line as well. And another name, too, that I was hearing a lot of last year, especially on pass rushing downs, I was hearing a lot of good things coming out of camp with George Wilson, and then he gets hurt. And so you got him coming back this year. Again, I don't know what you're going to get out of him, but I was hearing a lot of good things about him.
Yeah, he's an ACL guy. So we've seen, some guys can come back and they're fine. Like Jordan Strawn, though, a couple of years ago, speaking of 2023, and I felt so terrible for him, because I thought, man, if he had gotten back to where he was, he'd have been a terror, but he just wasn't the same. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I heard the same thing. And one of the scrimmages last year, George Wilson, they were like, wow, it was bad, because I have a source several of them that I call, hey, how's the scrimmage? And man, in the spring, he was going on and on about Jaylen Brown. And then he got hurt out for the year.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, going on and on about George Wilson, he got hurt back here. I was like, I hope I'm just not going to talk to him this year. But I think that's a guy too, and George is this big, long, you're talking about length, I mean, this guy's lengthy, and he's been here for a while, and if he could get to about 245, I like his chances, as long as he's still got that athleticism and burst on the inside. Tomiwa Durajaje from Illinois, that's the first guy that comes up when I talk about defensive tackles from the portal.
Yeah, I took a quick peek at him last night a little bit as well. I'm glad you said his name, because I wasn't going to try, because I was going to butcher it.
I've been calling him Big T for like
weeks. There you go. Yeah, I started diving into him a little bit last night as well. Some of his Illinois, I was going to try to go back and see kind of what he did at Florida State, but I was starting on Illinois last night. I mean, again, another experienced guy in there that should just step in, I would imagine, play right away. To go along with GBD and Troy Pax, I think GBD with another year under his belt as well, he's gonna have a really good year. I'm extremely high on Troy Pax. I don't know what it is, but it seemed like the more reps he got, the better he got, and the Clemson game is probably his best game. And I don't know. I just keep – something keeps coming back. Troy Pax, I think he's going to be really good on that defensive line next year. Probably a guy that a lot of people's not really even talking about that much. But a couple games in, you're going to be sitting there saying, man, this Pax kid. I don't know, and I hope that's the case. But haven't saw much on Jordan Thomas yet. But, I mean, I know he's big. I mean, come from Georgia. Obviously, you can play. Really curious on this D-line group. And I think if Dylan Stewart comes back 100% healthy, which no reason why he wouldn't, and just, I mean, he's, of course, he's going to have to focus. So if Caleb Herring can bring that speed off the edge, man. Hopefully it could come back to a Kyle Kinnard, Dylan Stewart type duo over there, you know.
Yeah, strike fear into people, man. That was that was sick.
Brian Thomas was good this year. He was solid, but I don't know, man. Kyle Kinnard just, I mean, it's like he was always just disrupting a lot more. You know what I mean? Just disrupting. And that's no disrespect to Brian. Brian was really good for us this year, but it ended up with seven, eight sacks. But Kinnard was just constantly just whipping a tackle over there, you know, and back there. And hopefully, you know, if you're going to bring the attention on Stewart, well, then Caleb's coming off the edge and vice versa. And then so we'll see. We should have a lot of size and speed up there on that unit this year.
I thought 24, one of the most underrated things about Kinnard was the teams would try a jet sweep or something. He would just annihilate it. That, I remember specifically that happened against Alabama, but I think LSU and some others tried that mess, and he just wasn't having it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that too many teams ran to the outside consistently, with the exception of Missouri, which always does, against the Gamecocks this past year. But it just wasn't the same, you know, in that department. And then, you know, but yeah, I mean, sometimes you're not going to have that every year, but I do think it was important to upgrade that side of it. And yeah. And you also lost Desmond Umezulu and JT Gear and, you know, some depth there too. So I thought that was important. You know, they brought in a bunch of running backs. I mean, I'm sitting there at three and now they're at six.
Mm-hmm.
We all saw the Citrus Bowl. Talked to a contact that's very tied in at Texas. Before Christian Clark had not even gotten in the portal yet, and actually had just announced he was coming back, and he said, well, the kid kind of feels like they're recruiting over him because they got Hollywood Smothers and Pete from Arizona State from the portal, and that's understandable. But he's kind of young still. I thought in the bowl game, he good feet, patient runner, explosive, good-looking prospect, man, at running back, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, young guy, like you said, but when he had his opportunity in the bowl game, man, he sure did take advantage of it. Like you said, patient was a big thing with him that I noticed that jumped off as well during that game. Ran hard, would stick his face up there and block, blitz pickup. I think it was the first drive of the game. I mean, they dropped back and he stepped up and just took on a linebacker and took him from the A gap to the C gap and watched him just slam out of there. I was like, whoa, okay. But yeah, you pair him up there with Howe, and I'm big on Matthew Fuller as well. I think Fuller should have a big year this year. But yeah, I was once we got Clark, I went digging and I was like, I like it, really 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 like that pickup right there. No idea how he got the South Carolina. As far as was there any connections there, because he's from Arizona, went to Texas, and then boom.
Yeah, his I think Darren Usher may have. Remember, because Oregon was in the mix for him when Darren was at Oregon, because he was a redshirt freshman this past year, so his second year at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And Oregon recruits Phoenix pretty heavily. They signed three guys from Phoenix out of the portal, amazingly enough. I wonder, and they probably all know who Spencer Rattler is, so hey, sometimes that pays off,
right?
But they were, you know, my understanding was, and I could say this now, I mean, I was told about him before, and I was like, where is the connection there? I also think his dad or his mom, one of them grew up in Georgia. So there's family there too. So it's not like he's just coming out and his whole family's back west, but okay. I'll take it because I love Jawaan Howell and Matt Fuller a lot. But the more the better, because sometimes at that spot you'll have injuries and sometimes they get worn down and you need more than one.
100%.
So that's pretty good. Quasheed Scott's coming back from Kentucky. I believe, and I think it's pretty much well known, that he's there to replace Kilgore at nickel. Number one, what do you think of Scott? And then number two, it seems to me like the nickel in this defense – in Clayton White's scheme, kind of ties it all together. Because I remember in 23, they had Nicky Minwore at nickel, and that just wasn't his thing. And that was when Mississippi State torched them for yards, and they gave up all those yards to Florida in the past game and things like that. And then they landed on Kilgore and went kind of more of a three-man front, and it got better. And Kilgore never left that spot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do you think of Quaseed Scott stepping in at that spot? And also, in your opinion, how important is the nickel in Carolina's defense?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is any breaking news. I mean, I would imagine he's day one starter. He's starter right now, walking out there. And he instantly fills that role. I mean, he's an experienced guy, once again, from Kentucky. You see him play, man. He's all over the field to me. Really like him. Really like him. I mean, because you got to replace that spot this year with Kilgore. So good. I'm a huge Kilgore guy. And even his brother, honestly, I didn't know what was getting out of his brother when his brother got here. And, I mean, the more he plays, the more he makes plays. But, yeah, Scott, I love it. He's just going to fit right in to me. And then just I don't see a much of a drop-off there. Different type of player, though. Kilgore's bigger and whatnot. But as far as a really good nickel, I believe you got it right from the jump right there with Scott. I'm more worried about the safety position and what we're going to do there. I mean, because you got Gerald. And then, I mean, from there, what, you know, is Peyton going to be the starter or what? I don't know. Can we see a freshman back there two or three games in with Currents? But to me, I think nickel and corners were good. And then safety is kind of up there. I mean, I'm okay with Kilgore. Like I said, I think he's improving. Every time he steps out there, he's getting better and better. I mean,
yeah. The
Missouri game was on the brink of kind of, you know, getting, I won't say out of hand, but kind of like, hell, here we go. You know, the defense is getting worn down. The offense gets out of hand. And he has that great interception and kind of kept us in it for a little bit right there, type thing. So, and then, you know, of course, he had the pick six versus Kentucky.
Yeah.
I think we're okay. And I like Peyton Williams. I just don't know. You know, I would like him more as a rotational guy than the starter being out there.
Yeah, he's a guy that does some nice things, but there were some times he didn't. And the A&M games never quit if everybody's mind too. And then, yeah, my dream, and it's not going to come true most likely, but I would love, you know, because they'll work all this out in practice, right? If Jazavian Currents and Kendall Daniels won the two starting jobs, that's a 6'3", 220-pound safety and a 6'4", 220-pound safety. Both played quarterbacks both ways in high school. They're good players, big-time athletes. That's a lot of length, man. But I don't know. You know, safety's also a position where you have to know your assignments because the whole thing could come apart. So I don't know if that happened. Right. That intrigues me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean – That'd be incredible if it could happen like that. I mean, talking about the length and the size back there. I mean, and those guys can run, obviously. So, and I expect to kind of bounce around in the secondary. I think Judge is going to have a better. I don't think Judge was ever fully healthy last year after he got hurt in Atlanta. And Judge in 24 was really, really good. I think it was the Ole Miss game where he kind of caught my eye. I was like, okay, this guy can hold his own. I mean, he's out there one-on-one with those guys, and those Ole Miss guys can play. And so, yeah, I mean, secondary, I think we're going to be okay. Safety, I think, you know, it's going to kind of wait and see, work it out type deal. I mean, nobody knew that DQ Smith and Nick Moore was going to be thrown in the mix right there, and there they were. But to me, I'm kind of worried about linebacker. If that's my biggest fear on defense, and I like what we got there. I think Fred's got so much potential. I would like to see more of it this year come out. I know last year, first year starting. So let's get that out the way. And I would love to see a big year from Fred, because I think Fred has all the potential in the world. But linebacker to me, I don't know. I mean, you had Debo Williams and D Knight. Debo was the leader as far as the guy that's been there. Then D Knight comes in as a leader. And those two guys just, I mean, I don't know. They were all over the field. I feel like we need more of that from our linebackers this year, as far as, you know, and I think that kind of hurt in the run game this year too, man. These guys wouldn't quite get off the blocks as we were in 24, or wasn't quite pursuing like we were in 24. So I would love to kind of see us get back there. But to me, linebackers is the biggest question mark that I'm kind of worried about. I think we got the guys to do it. We just got to do it.
Yeah, very inconsistent last year. I mean, I'm the president of the Fred Johnson fan club. You can ask these guys. Yeah. And boy, I was feeling like we all were, feeling myself after the Virginia Tech game. He's like an All-American.
Yep.
And then, like, sometimes young linebackers, sometimes you can look slow and unathletic because you miss your keys and you take false steps. And Justin Onwuranko is going to be really good too. You know, some big time schools came after him in the portal, and Carolina held on to.
If you're the president of Fred, I'm probably the president of him.
I'm
a big Onwuranko fan too. Yeah, I liked what I saw out of him.
Yeah, I had a coach tell me that's a major coach at a big name program because we were kind of talking about it, and he's like, he's really, really good. But inconsistent sometimes, made mistakes. And linebacker, when you make mistakes, you don't look good, and it's you're playing slow and stuff. I thought Sean Murphy, I've said this, I was kind of disappointed, honestly, the first half of the season. I thought around, Ole Miss, maybe he started hitting, he started tackling a little better, putting his nose in there. Had a huge game against Coastal and made some plays against Clemson. I think kind of as the third linebacker there, that's fine. Give Clayton White and Trey Money credit. I thought he was one that sort of improved quietly during the year.
Yeah. Sean, if you want a linebacker, just go look at him. He's got the size and speed. This guy's just, he's like an action figure built That's what it was for me too. Just some inconsistency, whatever, missing tackles or whatnot, or not in the right gaps. But he improved the more the season went. So I'm definitely fine with Sean kind of being that third guy if he ends up being that third guy. I would imagine Fred and Justin's probably the starters. But I like the guys. I just need to see more consistent play there. And hopefully with a year under their belt. Because that was really. Especially with Justin and Fred, that's, they're thrown to the fire and said, you're the guys. So I get it.
Yeah. But I'm with you though, dude, you're absolutely right. It's like you, cause I want to be like, these linebackers are elite, but they didn't do it. They were up and down. Matt, you got something, man?
Well, I was going to say, you'd talk about that linebacker position and who devises the defensive schemes for South Carolina. Well, that's their position coach. So another year in the system, I feel pretty confident that when you take their athletic measurements and what they've flashed in different times throughout their career, I'll go ahead and take Sean Murphy. I'll be the president of his fan club since y'all took the other two.
Okay.
But no, I think linebacker is going to be a strength of this team. And I think someone in the chat box, Carolina Titans, said, I think Gamecocks have a linebacker with over 110 tackles this season. That could happen.
Great. Fine with me, man. Does that mean
the team is already secondary? How about it?
Yeah. So, all right, Smitty, we'll get you out of here, buddy. I really enjoy these football talks, man. We're going to have more all that. So tell everybody what you got going on the sites and the channel and all that and where they can find you.
Well, I'm Deputy Smitty on everything other than my sports YouTube. That's, Smitty Sports Network. But I'm Deputy Smitty on really any platform that you can think of. I'm on there. I do my gaming stuff during the week at night, 10 o'clock Eastern time. I'm on there live on Twitch. That's my main thing. But y'all can find me anywhere.
Sweet. Thank you so much, my man. Yeah, hold it down on the bird.
Yep. Thank y'all. Appreciate it, guys. Mm-hmm.
All right. Deputy Smitty, always love him.
Yeah, man.
Coming on, it's just a fantastic, fantastic conversation.
Well, I think that, taking the gaming aspect of what he does, on his main channel, then adding the sports, what is sports? Sports is just a game. And when you understand how games work, you can dive into pretty much anything with his coaching background as well. I'm sure that's helped him in his space. But yeah, he is really bright, man. I always enjoy hearing him talk football.
What kind of gaming does he get into? Have y'all checked out his Twitch?
I know he does a lot of like GTA. Yeah, maybe some first-person shooter games.
Okay. I'm not a gamer, so I wouldn't.
I'm not either. Yeah, so
my stepkids would recognize it, but not.
Yeah. I used to be a gamer. I don't have time to be a gamer. I wish I could game. I'm staring at an Xbox right over there that hasn't been turned on in 8 months.
I used to have marathon sessions on like NCAA football. Like,
yeah.
Before I was a recruiting guy, I was a recruiting guy on the Xbox PlayStation.
But, JC, you'd love it now because there's all kinds of aspects to recruiting.
That's why I don't buy it, because I don't have time.
That's Alex Jones too. Alex won't buy it. He has a system that's older. He's like, I would spend all my time doing that.
Yeah, I don't have time to do it. I'd waste too much time.
Willpower.
Right, hold on, we have another break. We got to get in.
Yeah, we can squeeze one more in. Yeah.
All right, let's get one more break in. We'll be right back to wrap up the week. The Late Night Game Cup. The Mad Dog, JC Sherbert. Special thanks to Deputy Smitty.
Yeah, man.
Another fantastic segment. Back to wrap up the show. Chief Sports Network after this.
Jeffrey's got space and a touchdown.
Can you believe it?
If your golf game needs a little help, McKellar Enterprises is one click away. Meredith Taylor, a former Gamecock golfer, fields clients from all across the country. Golfers of every level are enrolling in her well-rounded golf camps. They're improving their game through virtual and on-course lessons. And now, many are a part of the membership program that gives you multiple monthly coaching options to get better. Are you improving for fun? Don't want to hold the group back any longer? Visit McKellarEnterprises.org today and go Gamecocks.
Test ride at Electric Bikes of Charleston today. Road trip ready. Ride comfortably. Forget road fatigue. The Velotric Fold 1 Plus features our exclusive Comfort Max frame design for an effortless, upright riding posture and a low step through. With an adjustable seat and stem, you'll be feeling great and ready for the next campsite adventure. Your back will thank you. Visit Electric Bikes of Charleston. Electric Bikes, Charleston.com.
New year, better floors. Now is the time. Refinish your hardwood floors with Recoat Revolution. Beautiful like new floors in just one day. No dust, affordable, and five stars. Give us a call in South Carolina, 803-397-1365. Or visit us at RecoatRevolution.com. Go Gamecocks!
Welcome to Dry Space Crawl Space Solutions. Basement crawl space encapsulation designed for your specific needs. Your crawl space can be susceptible to all sorts of issues, including moisture buildup, mold growth, and structural damage if not cared for properly. Let our trained experts provide basement crawl space encapsulation solutions to protect your home, improve air quality, and enhance energy efficiency. Schedule your consultation today for a safer, healthier space at dryspacecs.com. Dry Space Crawl Space Solutions, proud supporters of your South Carolina Gamecocks.
Clowns are people too. Clowns are people too. Now I own some tiny horns and got me those red shoes. I don't know much, but know one thing that's true. If you don't know anything, just know that clowns are people too.
Now back to the clowns on the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome back, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show. Final segment of the show here on a fantastic Friday. Of course, we've got the late night Gamecock himself, Matt Anderson, in with us, and we are wrapping things up. If you missed it, we just stopped to had a great conversation with Deputy Smitty, kind of breaking down some of the transfers, taking a look at the new faces that are bringing a lot of experience this cycle, guys. That's, I think, is really, truly the hallmark of this portal class. It's interesting. You looked at that. The last one was kind of eligibility remaining, I think, was the theme, right? These yeah. guys were not going to be one and done players, but it's a little bit of a flip here back to what we saw in 24 with some of those guys who came in and were like, okay, these guys are here to fill specific holes and lean on their experience to try to elevate this team from a leadership perspective. And it's also one of the things that Beamer addressed in his press conference was that you're not just bringing in the experience, you're bringing in some more leadership qualities with some of the guys that have joined the team this year.
I think in college sports nowadays, older, more mature people can better navigate it. This was kind of the coffee topic today. I'm sorry. Do y'all hear a phone ringing whenever, just now, did you hear a phone ringing?
No,
it goes in my ear. It goes. I don't know why my computer rings when Apple products are all synced up. So anyway, I just missed a phone call I need to get. So Phil, we probably need to start the music.
Yeah, let's fire it up. Yeah, start
the music. I gotta drive back to the downtown Chicago, the hospital. But
I totally get it. Yeah.
My point with that was, though, and I'll let Matt comment too, is that it doesn't guarantee you're going to win. I'm not going to sit here and say the Indiana plan is applicable to every season in college football, because we don't know that yet.
No.
I do know this, in college basketball for a long time now, probably you can trace it to when everybody got portal heavy, maybe even before, or not portal heavy, transfer heavy, because there was before portal. In the NCAA tournament, that does work.
Yeah.
The older teams. But I just don't think we're there yet in football. I think what it does do, though, is it does bring that leadership. This team had trouble closing games out. And I think especially on the offensive line, guys, which has been a big problem for a while. Any coach will tell you, the more experienced up front you are, the better. It's a thankless, hard freaking position to play. Yeah. And older people, most of the time, are better to able to handle it. Go ahead, Matt. Give us your final thought. Matt, wrap the week up for us, my friend.
Oh, man, it's a lot of pressure. Center, I haven't listened to any of the week this week. I've been pretty busy. I agree. I mean, I think the transfer portal just needs to be used to fill in gaps. And when you get guys that have a lot of snaps, and we reference the defensive snaps that are returning, you might have played a lot, but you've seen a lot too. And you can know where players are strong, where players are weak, and you scheme, you know, their deficiencies away. So I have high hopes for South Carolina this year. I think they did a great job in the portal, and I think they filled the gaps very, very well. Basketball tomorrow, I'll have my three keys. I'll shoot those over to JC earlier in the morning, and we'll get those done. A preview, I will not pick South Carolina to win. I haven't looked at the line yet. Look, I'm just telling you, this Missouri team, if they're playing their 80%, that's better than South Carolina's 100%. Now, if they play their 50% ball game, South Carolina can win this one. But this is another team that's going to throw big bodies at you. They go pretty much 6'8 to 6'10 from their 3 to their 4, and they will get into the paint, and they'll make the Gamecocks' life miserable if they can run their game plan. So what you got to do is you got to take the Florida defensive game plan that you started the game with, and Florida is much better than Missouri, despite Missouri beating them earlier this year. You got to have that game plan. The players got to buy in. They got to play that for 40 minutes to have a chance. But we'll talk more about that tomorrow. I'm excited for softball. Watched some of that game last night. Going to be plugged into softball the rest of the weekend. And 5K race tomorrow that I am not participating in, so I get to watch that one. Excited for that. And then, big games tomorrow. A lot of big college basketball games. If you guys haven't looked at it, I'll rattle off some so everyone knows what they're doing on Saturday. But you got Illinois and Michigan State at 8 p.m., Houston versus BYU at 10:30 p.m. So once you get the kids to bed, the wife to bed, the husband to bed, whatever, you go watch these games. Alabama-Auburn at 4, Florida-Texas A&M. Does A&M bounce back, or does Florida continue to terrorize the rest of the SEC? That's at 8:30. Tennessee-Kentucky, two teams that need wins and to get, you know, higher seeds in the NCAA tournament. Then Duke-North Carolina as well. That's at 6:30. Georgia-LSU, Wisconsin-Indiana. Clemson's out in the West Coast. They're playing California. I got my eyes on that one. I think California could spring an upset. A lot of good hoops on Saturday. And then you got Sunday. Looking forward to the Super Bowl. And Monday night, we'll be right back with a Monday night late night Gamecock show. So excited for that as well. Again, Wood will be there. We'll talk a lot of baseball. And golly, guys, next weekend, Carolina baseball starts.
Yeah, that'd be something else. All right, just good, one word Super Bowl pick.
Oh, man, I got Seahawks. I got them covering the 4.5.
Seattle. Yeah.
Seattle. All right. Everybody's in agreement. When we're the three best friends that anyone's ever known. Put that in there. All right. For the Late Night Gamecock and the Mad Dog, JC Sherbert. It's been a fantastic week, folks. Lots of big stuff happening next. As Matt mentioned, opening day for baseball. We'll have a combined show that day. Three hours from JB. We'll be at Founders Park. I do not know if I'll have a coffee on Monday morning yet, but you got two other. Yes, SEC Sunday night, late night that day, so you don't need a coffee.
Yeah, we got plenty of stuff coming out Monday. Yeah,
we'll be back with the show definitely on Monday morning. And until then, take care, folks. Have a great weekend.
See y'all.